Welcome everybody to the Brothers Wist. This is going to be cast number 15, probably the first one in, I don't know, probably like 3 months or better. I guess everybody's kind of had a lot of stuff going on, to say the least. So this is probably going to be one of the longer ones, which is not to say that any of our other ones are short, because they're never short.
March 18th.
Yeah, and we haven't had Andrew on here in forever, and I haven't talked to Andrew in forever. And so to me, this is just like a huge occasion, the fact that I actually get to see him for a second.
I've been busy throwing myself off cliffs and things.
So I'm excited about that. So, again, the brilliant Australian Andrew Cox up there in the left-hand corner. Nice enough to donate his lunch break to talk to everybody. And then we've got Justin Wilson. He's an institution. He's always here. And then we've got Mike Hammett, who's our special guest for today. And I'm sure he has plenty to say, plenty to talk about, because you can't shut him up no matter what you want. So let's, I guess, what's probably the best thing to do is just to catch up with everybody really quick, because everybody's been doing so many, like, just different interesting things. And so since Andrew's alphabetically correct, and he's already on my left, he's on the port side there, we'll go ahead and start with him. So, Andrew, what have you been up to, other than trying to snap your arm in half, which was an interesting
thing? Well, yeah, that was it. I think my last cast would have been probably January, or possibly even before that. But we were doing a lot of integration work with a new company that we bought. Getting all their networks combined with ours, and finding where our private network space crossed over, and renumbering everything. I'm sure some people here have gone through that when you merge with another network. Then in February I was playing sports with a couple of friends and playing dodgeball, and ended up breaking my arm throwing a ball.
Yeah, not getting hit, not falling down, but throwing the ball.
Throwing off the ball.
This is what happens when a small rubber sphere breaks the sound barrier. It ripples through and breaks your arm.
Yeah, so we should do a bit of a health alert here to everyone. So subsequently found out that I have a vitamin D deficiency. Now, for those of you who don't know, vitamin D you get from sunlight. The doctor basically looked at the readings and was like, yeah, no, this would have been going on for like 2 or 3 years now. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you don't get much sunlight, just make sure to get vitamin D supplements instead, because vitamin D helps your calcium absorption, whatever, and that's what builds your bones up. It's quite common in our industry. So.
I think since we last talked to you, also moved. I think you're completely.
Yes. Yeah. So I've moved from. I was living in Adelaide, and I've moved to Brisbane, which is on the east coast of Australia, up in the sunny area, while everywhere else is like 1 to 2 degree mornings at the moment, or lower. So it was a lovely 8 degrees here this morning. It's sunny, so no rain or anything at the moment, which is nice. But that was interesting for me, because, yeah, there was 2 months I was there in a cast and still trying to work and get all these migrations done in time. So typing one-handed, I've worked out I can do 40 words a minute. And then when I got back to two hands, it's like, oh, it's like... Someone just added like a second screen to my life. I can do everything so much faster.
So now you can drive and type just fine. Like, no worries, right?
Yeah, I'm used to it now. I'm just
that's awesome. So when you say we've been doing these changes, it's been you, right? You've been doing all this mess.
No. I have a little team of guys now that help me out. Some based in Melbourne, which is south side of Australia. Some based with me in Brisbane. So, these are the people that basically were responding to my commands while I was off injured as such. I'd be in bed, come out for 1 to 2 hours, and do this, do that. Okay, get back to me when you're done. Give me a call. followed by, okay, guys, I'm about to take some more painkillers, so I'll be out for a couple of hours.
Disregard anything I say for the next couple hours. It might be a little crazy.
Card number is...
Don't come and lick my cat, I promise. I didn't mean that. So, I'm checking out your blog. Let's see what you have new. Apple USB Ethernet adapter plus router on S, E-Tool success.
Yeah, I picked up one of those little adapters, just trying it out with the USB ports on, I think it was a 751. So just to see if you can extend it out, and you can plug a hub in and connect up like three or four of those things.
Oh, nice.
So let's see how it goes. And I mean, that means it would work with x86 boxes as well. It would work with it should work with like a CCR or a 2011 or things like that.
That's cool.
I can't think of a specific use where someone would require an extra, like just a single port like that, but I guess it's good to know that it works in case you do lose support for any reason.
You say that, but I keep a thumb drive in my laptop bag that's got a router OS on it, and then I have a Linksys USB NIC that very similar to that, so that if I ever get in a pinch, I just put that in there and stick it in my laptop and boot up, and I've got two ports. You can make something happen.
Yeah, well, you can turn your laptop into a router in a pinch. So
yeah, so it works great.
Have an in and out. So.
Yeah, steady guy moving up to router OS 6 version 6. So what do you? Yeah, so I guess a lot of you guys have already started using 6 now. 6.1 is the stable release that they have out now. What do you guys think about that?
I'll go first.
I was saying to the guys here,
yeah, we've rolled out 6.1 in a couple of production environments now. We were running it for a while just in the office, and prior to that, 6.0 RC8 was the one we were testing out. There is definitely still some bugs in there, but nothing we found yet that affects our core areas, which are the PPPoE logins, the hotspot logins, and the simple queues. We haven't had any problems with. They're all dynamically allocated. And we're seeing... I replaced an x86 box the other day that was sitting at 70% CPU usage overnight. The new CCR sits at 5% maximum. So it's like plenty of overhead there. We're replacing a 2RU full rack depth box with this little CCR unit. It's just... Hey, look, the UPS has got like 4 hours of runtime now.
Was it you that said after they went to 6 or 6.1 on their x86 boxes, they saw like a 15% to 20% CPU improvement?
Yeah, we've rolled it out to a couple of x86 boxes in smaller locations as well, just to kind of see how it performs there. I think I've touched on this in the past, but we run most of our x86 installations on top of ESXi, just so we can kind of roll back and forwards if needed. We've got like an extra a layer of abstraction there that we can get in and reinstall them if we need to, if anything goes horribly wrong. So we upgraded a couple of those, snapshotted them and everything, and seeing some reasonable performance enhancements, just mainly in that simple queues area, like before... version 5 simple queues was just a pass packets all the way through the list until they get to who they're supposed to go to, whereas now they've changed that around, so it's being delivered out to everywhere at once. So that's definitely improved the sort of performance and handling that we're seeing as well.
Very cool. And then the last thing I see on your blog here, you've got terminal health. What's that all about?
We're playing around with a couple of scripts that so, you know, when you open up the terminal, normally you have the little microtik banner and you can have a little message of the day there. I was tinkering around with something that one of the guys on the microtik router OS Facebook page sent through to me that actually collects stats from the router, so the CPU usage, the temperature, all things like that you could go in and find yourself. And it's just manually setting the message of the day to that every couple of minutes. So when you log in via SSH, it puts up all that information there and says, here's the health stats for that router. So I made a couple of changes and plugged in hotspot counts, like hotspot user counts and PPPoE, so we could see that as well.
That's cool. That's very cool. So before I derail, what did Justin, have you tried some of the version 6 code yet?
Yeah, I'm running 6.0 on a production router. We're actually now doing dual CCRs at the edge on one network, and we got them OSPF together. That way we can actually do an upgrade in the middle of the day, and you know, we basically have a master and a slave. It's not VRRP, it's just using OSPF. So, you know, that allowed us to, you know, basically try the bleeding edge, you know, code and everything on these CCRs without an issue. I had an issue one time. I upgraded one and it just, you know, it didn't come back without a power cycle. The thing I'm anxious to test out, and I have to go down to the data center to do this, is in the, I think the 6.1 change log, they finally fixed negotiation issues with Cisco's. For the longest time, the CCRs will not link up a gig with the Cisco gig interfaces.
Yeah, I saw that. And as soon as I read that in the changelog, I thought of the problems you had when you were first doing the install.
So I'm anxious to try that out. I might be able to get to that this weekend. But other than that, you know, we've been seeing, you know, pretty stable with ever since, I don't know, RC12 or so on the CCRs. It used to be we had to reboot them every week or so because they just kind of stopped passing OSPF traffic. But we haven't seen that at all lately.
Nice.
So I'm just running it on CCRs so far.
Very nice. How about you, Mike? What have you seen?
I haven't put on anything yet. Been too busy.
All right, you're dead to me. I've tried it on just my home router, and it, I don't know, I'm not really doing anything too exotic, but it seems to run CPU-wise about the same, and the throughput seems the same, so I don't know, haven't really had an opportunity to put in production yet.
The routing and forwarding, like, it all seems to be there and stable. It's the most of the bugs that I'm hearing back from people are either little things like the negotiation, just oddities that you'll stumble across. And I think Andrew Thrift reported there's still some BGP-related issues with VRFs, but that's been, yeah, that's an outstanding bug from a long time ago.
Yeah, I think
basic BGP, no problems.
Yeah, I think the MPLS issues are stemming almost since its inception. So there's just a lot, yep, of stuff they haven't quite, they probably just haven't had the time to focus on those areas.
Yeah, I figure there's very few people using that full functionality there, though, so it makes sense to me that there's some things that just haven't been discovered yet because people are trying to do new and exciting things with them. The other thing I'm interested to see how it actually performs is that partitioning option. They have now that built-in option to have multiple copies of RouterOS running at different versions and fall back to an older version if for any reason the new one crashes. So hopefully that kind of removes the need for us to go, well, we need to run these on ESXi, or we need to have a remote access console or whatever. Because
now, how does that really differ from the whole meta router concept?
I think, from my understanding, it's you've got your active firmware and you've got your fallback. So if something crashes on the active, it'll kind of roll back and reboot with the fall. Is that correct?
Yep. Yeah, that's what I've seen. And you can copy the config or you can copy the partitions. So you can make a clone of the existing partition you have or copy the config between them. So it'll be interesting to see. I haven't actually been able to crash one to actually see how that would work yet or whether it would work. So I guess it's...
And even then,
you don't want to run into that problem, but...
As you say, even then, unless you had a console cable hooked up, would you even be able to see what happened? Or just all of a sudden it would be in an old version, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. Who knows? Yeah.
They need a syslog message, a special one that dumps and says, hey, it's completely crapped. Otherwise, I'll just think it rebooted. I won't know the difference.
Yeah. So. Yeah, you need to, like, I don't know what sort of alert it gives or whatever, but we'll keep an eye out. And if anyone has any... if any of the people watching this have any experiences with it or any comments on it, let us know. Be good to see who's played further with it.
Oh yeah, I mean it's so new. I would definitely want to hear some of the more exotic bugs people have run into. the stuff that hasn't made it to the change log yet.
I kind of troll the forums a little, looking for, you know, okay, what's the weirdest bug of the day?
Awesome. So let's see, what else has happened since then? Since the last time we talked, you guys, Justin and Mike, you guys went to Wisp America, right? Which is the,
yes, we did.
That's the, I guess they're doing that just once a year. So you've got Wispapalooza, which is the big Wisp meeting in Vegas, and that's going to happen in October. And then they're doing a smaller one now called Wisp America. And that one kind of travels around, correct?
Right, yeah. It, last year it was just ISP America. I think it was in Orlando. And they've had some smaller ones before that, I think. But that's kind of how the cycle goes now.
Yeah, they try to do a spring and a fall show. The fall show's the big show. So, you know, I think they're gonna have it where the Vegas show is, it's anchored in Vegas. And then the other one's going to, you know, and the spring show's going to kind of travel around a little, that way they can get, you know, diverse people there. How many people were there at the one? It was basically in Cincinnati. It's right across the river in Danville, Kentucky. There's quite a bit of people there.
Yeah,
trying to encourage people that wouldn't otherwise make it out to the main one.
Which I think is kind of the same thing MikroTik's been doing, you know, because they pick kind of a different state, a different city every year. They move it all over the country, which I wish Wispa would do that with their big one, too. Vegas is like, Vegas is Vegas, I guess. But I want to go to some new and interesting places. So what did you guys pick up? I'm looking at Justin's blog here, and he says UBNT has some of the new Unify 3 on display. So I guess, yeah, the Unify controller version 3 is out now. And it looks remarkably like the previous version. But they announced their AC equipment. I guess that was announced before or since the last time we talked. So their 802.11 AC equipment's out. I've actually had the opportunity to unbox and use one.
I would imagine so.
Yeah.
I think everybody's waiting here for the big Greg reveal.
We'll get to that later. So the ACs, I mean, they're neat. They're solid. It's like they're made out of lead or something. There's a lot of stuff packed in there. 802.11c, I guess that's, what do they anticipate that being? It has full market share in about a year and a half, I think. Equipment's starting to finally come out with it.
I was reading, a thing on Facebook that said, you know, when do you think, you know, AC is going to be the prevalent one? And everybody was saying basically 2014.
Next year.
Yeah.
That's fast. That's really fast.
I've heard that there's a lot of phones out there now, or at least a fair amount of phones that have it already, you know, built in.
Really?
Yeah.
How about to me, there's only two phones. You've got the Galaxy line and you've got the iPhone. So if those two don't support it, then to me, it doesn't exist.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cause I mean, they have the lion's share of the market, and that's what everybody's carrying, you know? So when I'm in an event and I see a bunch of, you know, glowing faces, it's always from those two devices. So.
Yeah, I know
as a version.
Sit here sadly with my little HTC.
Oh, well, I've got a Motorola Droid Razr, so I'm like grandpa out there. I say that I saw
the S4 has 802.11 AC.
Okay. Because I know, was it not until the iPhone 5 and the Galaxy S3 did kind of a major phone really have even 5 gigahertz support? Those were the first two. And those dropped, what, a year ago? Something like that?
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
The HTC One was the first phone to have AC.
Okay. And it's been out for a little while, hasn't it?
Yeah. The April, I think, was when it started shipping.
Okay. Well, that's not too bad. That's not too bad. So I guess probably the next generation of iPhone will most likely have it, and then I'm assuming the next Galaxy will probably have it.
You would assume so, but they seem to avoid other things like NFC.
Yeah.
looking at
every other phone now seems to have NFC and Apple still. Maybe.
Well, I guess when you're as big as they are, you kind of do what you want when you want.
Well, and Apple kind of their stance is, hey, we're not a techie phone. You know, we're the phone for everybody, kind of, you know, so we don't have to, you know, yeah, let's add some, you know, kind of geeky features, but
and there's
why should
that.
We?
I see more grandmas with the iPhone than anything else, so I believe it. But yeah, definitely, I am definitely looking forward to 5 gigahertz support in every mobile device. I'm done with the 2.4 stuff. That's old news for me. I'm really ready to see that 5 gigahertz stuff come around.
Yeah, I would imagine that the
just let a new spectrum
works better in the high density stuff. I'd imagine faster drop off and.
Well, all I really care about at this point is it's base speed. You know, the base modulation rate is going to be something like 6.5 megabits, as opposed to your 1. You know, that you'll see in the older stuff. So people aren't on. They aren't sending transmitting as long, just because they can transfer, you know, in 1/6 of the time.
Even at the base rate.
Exactly. And then on top of that, you've got more channels to work with. Even if you have to go into DFS range, you still, say with UniFi, for example, you've got 17 channels if you dip into DFS. So 17 versus 3, I mean, that's a no-brainer. It's got a whole lot more spectrum. So even if it's a slightly older generation, doesn't support all the DFS stuff, you can still kind of stagger DFS with non-DFS channels back and forth, and their likelihood of being within range is going to be greater. So,
well, in a, you know, in a environment where, you know, UniFi is and stuff, you know, even DFS, you don't have to worry about radar avoidance, really. You know, you're in a building, so, you know, as long as you're compliant, you know, what's the likelihood of you actually, you know, it actually tripping?
Right. And then even still, if you read a lot of people that even do outdoor installations, they're saying that they haven't really seen a DFS event in a really long time, that most manufacturers' radios are getting so good that they're really much more capable of picking up or differentiating between what's radar and then what's legitimate 5 gigahertz stuff. So. You don't see nearly as many problems with that anymore.
Yeah, there's a WISP up in Washington State that was complaining a few months ago that they had no usable DFS channels. That said, they have an NSA installation in some other DoD facilities nearby, and there are lots of helicopters in the air. So I could see that being legit.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Yeah, I certainly can see that as well. So let's see. Moving on. Let's see. What else do you have? What else were you talking? Oh, I'm sorry. Andrew, were you about to say something?
I was going to say, while we're on the UniFi stuff, did I see recently something about a hardware controller? Or is that just me? I'm just looking over the site to find it now. I swear I was looking through the forums recently. I saw,
I think you saw the new AirVision. Yeah, the new AirVision in VR.
Yeah, AirVision. Yeah, that was it. Sorry. Yeah.
Yeah, and somebody linked me to the hardware that they actually use. And I think if you go on Newegg and you outfit one, it ends up being something like $280, whereas the NVR I think is like $300, something like that. So it's almost a wash.
Dedicated hardware, though, like if it's supported by the people that are making the cameras and stuff, that's still a bit of a no-brainer to me, because you get the support and you know it's going to work.
Yeah.
I definitely know of places that have been rolling their own little units for the same for UniFi. Like they'll roll it for the air cam gear.
Yeah, and I actually saw I got an email or a comment from somebody who says this exact model. They've actually been installing UniFi on them and putting them out in customer sites. So the guy was kind of freaked out that Ubiquiti was in his head stealing his hardware. Yeah, so it's great. So I can definitely see, and I would love to see UniFi running on one of these units. I'm willing to bet you could install it because it's so lightweight. If you've got 20 access points, it's doing almost nothing anyway. So you might as well throw it on this hardware. They say that new the new MVR. I can't remember the specs right off the top of my head. Let me pop back and look at it. But it, I think you can do up to 50 cameras, is what they say. And with the new version 2 of the, let's see, it's up to 50 cameras, 400 hours at 720p, 1200 hours at 480p. It's got a 500 gig hard drive in the little guy. You know, it does most of the standard stuff. Camera-based motion detection, which is nice.
Yes, that's... Yeah,
we've been rolling them out.
Yeah, the user... Just
chucking them on towers and places where people have access. Like, is a WISP or a even doing the sort of residential stuff that we do, they've become our go-to for throwing cameras out in places just to see what's going on. So. Oh yeah. Why is this port just gone down to this customer? Oh look, there's a technician in there fiddling around with things. Who let him in?
And I know beyond Unify, they have just a raw stream that comes out of those guys, and as long as the DVR you use supports it, you can actually grab that. So they're not necessarily opening up an API for these cameras or anything like that, but as long as you're capable of grabbing that raw. So I've already talked to one vendor, something like Excite or Xbyte, something like that. Anyway, they didn't actually have them listed on their support, but I worked with them a little bit, and they're like, yeah, we can take that raw stream and grab them in. So it seems like most of your DVR manufacturers, as long as it's not like product, not like a Bosch DVR, because they're only going to work with Bosch cameras, but you know, just the regular integrated DVRs should be able to pull these in, which I think is cool.
Yeah, I know several people using, and I never can get the name. It's like Blue River or something like that. It's a DVR software, and they've been using that because they haven't been happy with the, the NVR so far. And I know several people who are using that. It's like a $60 program. Some DVR manufacturers OEM it even, and it's a nice package.
That's nice. Well, I know the new version of AirVision's got, let's see, what else does it have? User level security, so you can have different user accounts that have, you know, I guess, different cameras associated with them, which I think is really nice. You know,
that's really nice, yeah.
Because I know we do multi-tenant areas, and at the place I used to work for, we did multi-tenant areas where, you know, if they only occupy these couple of offices, you don't want them to be able to see everybody else's cameras, you know. Especially we did one for an art gallery, and we had to dedicate it just to the art gallery because we couldn't let people, you know, look at the $10 million storage area all the time, you know, when they just have one little office over here. Storage management, which is nice. So I'm guessing that's going to be, cause I haven't had the opportunity to use it specifically yet, but I think that means like, be able to set retention on your video so that it'll kind of, dump and overwrite and all that good stuff. Mobile device support, which is nice too, because I know I'm going to be doing some installs for schools pretty soon. Mm-hmm. So I know it's going to be brilliant for, say it's 7 o'clock in the winter and it's already dark. You know, the teachers that are about to leave, you know, just women who leave by themselves, you know, they can actually just pull up their phone and check really quick and see, you know, is my parking spot cool? You know, can I just walk out there? So I think just kind of peace of mind, it'll be nice for that.
Good stuff.
Yeah, so those are going to be cool.
Yeah, we're seeing several, several small business and home ISP users. They're buying the internet for these locations just for cameras. You know, they have a remote facility, or you know, they have a farmer has a grain leg, or you know, somebody has something, and they're not actually using the internet there. They're just using it for the cameras, and they want to be able to access those cameras remotely.
It's brilliant. It's brilliant for that. So I think, especially with that little solid state NVR, the only thing that's moving is the hard drive. I think that's going to be great to just toss out in any site because they're so small. Just set it, forget it. I'm looking forward to using them. I know that. Because that's kind of, I guess when you think about it in a grand scheme, that's the only thing you can't put in the cloud, because it's just the storage requirements are too high. You can't just stream all that stuff off.
Yeah, you'd have to have fiber connections everywhere to even halfway keep up. You might as well be providing, you know, HD video to all your clients.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
So let's see. Justin, I'm looking at your blog, and also you recently played with some of the BitLimit hardware that just came out.
Yeah, I need to finish up some of my posts, but I've been playing with the BitLimit stuff since a little bit after the Wireless Without Limits cruise. Back in March, I got a couple test units, and I've had those up. It's just under a mile shot from a tower to a little house. So I've been I have the BitLimit, and I have a Ubiquiti right underneath it. So I've been kind of comparing, you know, side by side and trying to get some, you know, some baseline stuff going. I mean, I've been impressed. It's always nice to be, you know, the second guy around, I think, because they've said, okay, you know, what's missing? And they can easily, you know, kind of add some stuff in there, which makes it a pretty cool product.
Yeah. I know just from the form factor of the case, it looks very Ubiquiti-esque.
Yeah, and they, you know, even the PoE is the same, you know, from the same vendor. You know, I'm sure there's, you know, ultimately not that many, you know, PoE vendors out there anyway.
Power of Ethernet.
Yep. And you know, there's some things I could nitpick about it and stuff, and but it's, you know, that's true of anything. But yeah, I mean, it's and I think competition is a good thing.
Yeah, for
you know,
sure.
It's gonna drive the products to be better and to be, you know, a little less inexpensive and things like that.
Yeah, and to me, just looking at the menus and stuff like that, if you're familiar with Ubiquiti, you're familiar with this. I mean, it's just,
yeah,
the menu layout is almost the same. The hardware form factor is almost the same. One thing that did seem different was their kind of wizard setup, right?
Yeah, they have some wizard setups to, you know, set up your, you know, basically your four modes, and then that's pretty neat because it there's not much error checking going on, but you know, it actually kind of guides you through what to set up, and you know, I haven't seen that in, you know, hardly any other CPE, and I think from a you know, from a support standpoint. You know, you have not only the ISPs out there, but you have the people who the IT consulting firms that just want to do a point-to-point shot across, you know, a road or something. They don't know this stuff, so when they buy something, you know, they don't want to have to hire a yet another consultant to help them set up the wireless stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So having these little wizards like that, I think is going to be if that's something that they push, you know, oh, okay, I can buy this, and you know, my IT guy can do it.
Oh, yeah, I think it's brilliant. For two standpoints, one is if you're just trying to do a small shot, you'd be able to do it easy. Not to say it's difficult with Ubiquiti stuff or
no.
MicroTik's more complicated, but still, it's not that bad. But it's also good for consultants. That way, when this thing gets way too big for them too quick, you know, then they can call us in and shell out some coin and we can fix it for them. So it'd be great.
Yeah.
It'd be great. Oh, man. So overall, you think it's a promising looking product? Something it's going to be something?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's like any other, you know, newer product. There's still, you know, there's still features to add and things like that. But I think they've gone through and they've, from what I heard, they already had a pretty base product to begin with. So it's not like they're, you know, from the ground up kind of thing. So I think that gave them a little bit of jump start. You know, it'll be interesting to see how, you know, a loaded up, you know, AP handles, you know, 50, 60 plus clients. You know, that's always the, okay, you know, yeah, we can do tests on a couple people, but how does it scale? And right. that's the same with any, that's always the number one question with any, you know, Cambium, Ubiquity, you name it. How well does it scale?
Gotcha. That's cool, man.
And I like the fact that the CPE itself is a, you know, 16 degrees, you know, instead of, you know, 30 or whatever, you know, so it makes for a tighter, you know, less noisy install.
Very nice. What were you going to say, Andrew?
The pricing's, I was going to say the other thing is the pricing, if they can get the pricing down to a comparable price to the other vendors that are doing similar things, or if it can't be the same sort of pricing, as long as they have those additional features and things that make it stand out.
So, yeah, I know.
Yeah, I think we...
Go ahead.
You go. So I was going to say, I think we all know, like, the MikroTiks and Ubiquities of the world now are churning out unit after unit, and they do so at such a cheap rate compared to all the big players, but the feature sets that we've come to know and love are there. So when someone else comes in the market at the moment, it's kind of a case of what can you offer that these can't, and can you do it at a price point that is comparable?
I know for me, kind of the, I guess the overall outlook I have on the market is if you're a new product coming to market, you have to do something radically different. Because right now, I mean, they do have TDMA, but the kind of the good and bad thing about, well, I mean, the good thing about TDMA is that it gives you more utilization out of your hardware. You know, it can help with interference, all that good stuff. But it also locks you into a specific vendor because they're all proprietary. So if yeah. I've got 1,000 pieces of Ubiquity or 1,000 pieces of MikroTik, having to bring in BitLomat, it's not going to interact with my current environment. So I have to, you almost have to get these guys when they're first starting up, or have something that's so radically different that it makes sense to go ahead and
yep.
move to a new yep. product. So I guess from yep. that perspective, you gotta really be hungry, you know, you gotta have a really good product or just something really outstanding. So it seems like they've just, right now they've matched everybody else. I'm just waiting to see what's that piece that's going to be, you know, a game changer for them. What are they going to really whip out that's just so radically different?
True.
It's, I believe that one of their things that they had lined up before they got a lot of was feedback, which kind of put some other things ahead of it, but was beamforming. They're going to get beamforming going for them.
Are they?
But other people came forward and said, you know, we want DFS, we want 2.4, get that going for us first. So I think they're going to work on those angles and then circle back to the beamforming concept.
Very nice. Yeah, because I know MikroTik isn't doing it. I think I've heard rumors that Ubiquity has had some product out there that has done it, maybe even out in the field somewhere, but, you know, no announcements or anything like that as far as I know, so... At least that would be possibly potentially the game changer if they can get that out to market first. That, or maybe just get it out really quick and then have somebody buy them out.
Yeah, I mean, that's always, you know, an exit strategy too, is, you know, hey, look at a lot of the companies that have sold to Cisco. I think some of them, you know, their major goal was, hey, we're going to come up with, you know, this technology and we'll prove it. But we don't really care about, you know, and I'm not saying that's what they're doing, but, you know, it's, I've seen others do it, and it, you know, it can.
Mike, you're in DeKalb, right? Is that how you say that?
DeKalb.
DeKalb, up in Indiana, and you are apparently the most ridiculous Blackhawks fan. I'm getting sick of all your posting. I know, dude. I'm sure if you took that shirt off, that exact thing would be just tattooed on your chest right there.
Well, we did win the Stanley Cup last night, so it was pretty exciting.
Was it? Were you screaming and shouting?
Briefly. I mean, I was home, so I didn't get too crazy. But
it was totally worth it. So, yeah. So Mike, you are a man of many talents. I know you do the Wisp thing. You're always talking about fiber. You're always arguing about how doing radio is faster than doing long fiber shots and just other crazy, ridiculous things. So tell us a little bit about yourself and kind of some of the stuff you work on.
All right. Well, I've got a wisp about 60 miles west of Chicago. I have a very, should we say, diverse coverage area. I started my operation on my farm because I couldn't get broadband. And within my farm, we've got about, within about a 3-mile radius, we've got probably 150,000 pigs. So it's rural. But yet on the other side of my network, 3 years ago, I bought out my upstream because he was closing up shop. On that side of the network, you've got like the global headquarters of like OfficeMax, Lucent, all kinds of these big, huge companies. And it's like two very different demands. You know, you can't put up a, 2-4 access point in there and try to sell someone service. They've got fiber from above net or fiber from, Comcast or somebody. So, my plan is later this year to kind of step up a little bit on that big pipe game, start selling, 50, 100 meg circuits, synchronous connections, because that's kind of what I feel that side of the market needs. But then out here, it's just the same old, farmers and whatnot, and, needing the, actually we get the fiber pretty well out here too, most of the BTOP projects, but, I'll actually look at taking advantage of that to, kind of feed my wireless network. Save some of that spectrum for serving clients versus connecting towers.
Right. So,
yeah, Illinois is a very, what would you say, Mike? A very, I don't want to say forward thinking state, but it's a very, as far as their connectivity goes, I mean, they're one of the better states for getting everything connected.
Yeah, and I think it's, I mean, like, we have a better population densities than some areas, but then we've got, Chicago up in the corner, so that kind of bleeds out a little bit. I cover a very small area with my WISP, 20 miles by 40 miles or at the most, I would say. And I touched 13 WISPs. And that's after acquisitions. at that show in Cincinnati, there was 45 or 50 WISPs there from Illinois. And, that's not even a drop in the bucket. I'd imagine there's probably over 200, 300 WISPs in Illinois throughout the whole state. There's always been kind of legacy fiber throughout the state. We've got, Chicago in the corner, St. Louis in the opposite corner, but then, sprinkled throughout the state, we've got different pockets of, 100,000 population towns. You get U of I, it's not far from you, Justin, that's where they developed the web browser. That's where all these big internet.
Almost Mosaic. And, who here remembers Mosaic?
Yeah.
nobody.
Nobody. I'm old.
But even now, with all the BTOP projects, you probably can't go 30 or 40 miles without hitting fiber from a BTOP project somewhere. And, that kind of, all depending on your, belief as if the government should be doing that sort of stuff or not. I know there's been a lot of stuff there in Australia with government fiber and NBN and all that. But, we've got a lot of WISPs here that are, doing 15, 20, 25 megabit plans. It's just kind of, that's what they do because that's what people expect. If you go down to areas, like Jay down in Alabama, he's using 900 meg everywhere and, he only do it in meg and a half, 3 megs because that's all he can do.
Well, I mean, when you're talking, you know, some of the companies up there, they're providing internet to, you know, American Airlines, you know, Oprah, you know, places like that. They're providing access to, you know, I have a client up there. They're providing access to Oprah's airplane hangar, you know, and they're paying for, you know, some multi-megabit package. And just because that's what they want.
Yeah.
But they can't get anything else, so they're demanding from the WISP, hey, we want, you know, 10 megs, 15 megs, whatever it is.
And then not just from the operator perspective, but from the vendor perspective, there's a ton of vendors up here too. As far as manufacturers, you've got Bitlomet up on the north side of Chicago. You've got Memory Link, which is a little bit west of there, in Elgin. Memory Link's kind of been around for a few years. When I first saw them come on the scene, I was like, you know, I just saw, you know, 300 meg over the air rate. I'm like, oh, it's just another, you know, Wi-Fi based company. You know, I don't care. Really, you know, they have something spectacular, kind of what Greg was saying before. You know, you're going to have another wireless entrant do something spectacular. And I didn't think that they did. Well, then, you know, CTI has come along and, you know, aligned with them, kind of rebadged some of their stuff. And, you know, they haven't got it out in customer's hands yet, but they're talking about, 165 megabit of actual throughput with an actual GPS sync. Like, not, you know, let's put the damn. Sounds good to me. But they're claiming that their GPS sync will, obviously their product won't talk to a Canopy radio, but that you can put them next to each other and they can be synced, certain Canopy models anyway, and they won't step on each other, which I think is a big advantage. I mean, there's... At least around here, so many Canopy operators, and you know, give all your, you know, most of them have coordinated with each other to have the same sync settings, so they don't step on each other. Then you have all the Ubiquiti guys, the Microtech guys, doing their own thing, and it just becomes a mess. But if you can deploy, you know, 165 megabit speeds that will sync with a Canopy system, you know, you've got a whole lot more options.
True.
It's pretty cool. But I think, too, what's cool about you, Mike, is that if there's a technology, you want to do it. I've noticed that. So you do the WISP thing, and then I think, weren't you talking about building some kind of a data center at some point?
Yeah, kind
of.
I mean,
or it's sort of like taking over a building or something like that. And then you're talking about dumping a bunch of fiber. So it sounds like if you see a new toy, you just want to play with it. I think it's okay.
It's on the fiber.
Don't we all?
Hopefully by the end of the year on the fiber front, I'll have fiber to the home installed a few places. And that's kind of where some of the BTOP project kind of circles back, is that, you know, I don't want to do anything big because, well, I can't afford to do anything big. But there's, you know, there's pockets of, you know, 30 to 300 homes that are within a mile or two of this BTOP fiber. Don't have cable. You know, some may have DSL, but I don't consider DSL to be internet. You know, it goes meg and a half, 3 megs. You know, I get more than that on my cell phone. But, you know,
yeah, that's still like 70% of Australia right now.
geographically, that's a lot of the United States too. You know, population wise, not so much, but it's geographically. But no, you got these small pockets of houses close to that BTOP fiber. So you don't have to build, you know, 30 miles to get back to, you know, usable internet. Someone else already did that. I've got lined up where I'm looking at about probably $20,000 to $30,000 all in, and I can have fiber to the home to 50 houses. That's including, you know, a couple of CCRs. That's including, you know, the conduit, the fiber, the, you know, basically kind of taking a lot of stuff that Chuck Hogg has done. You know, I had lots of ideas for how to do it cheap, but then I saw what he's doing. You know, he's got, 2011s at every house. Well, when he finishes anyway. And then he's got some bi-directional SFPs he's getting from China for $40 a pair. And you know, he's just plugging into a hardened Metro Ethernet switch. I think at 16 ports is like $500. Like, that's not, you know, you can just incrementally just add another switch, you know, and if you run out of ports, you know, you've got extras on the CCR you can plug into. I mean, it's...
Well, the nice thing about Illinois there, too, is the state is doing, you know, a lot of this investment to, you know, to do this, right?
Yeah, it's, the state was involved in a lot of the BTOP projects. You know, there was... when the project, well, when the Stimulus Act was announced, the you know, the estate said, okay, you know, we're going to set aside X million dollars, which I thought was kind of foolish. We don't, Illinois doesn't have X million dollars. Illinois doesn't have X billion dollars. We're broke. Because you needed on some of these, you needed to provide 20% to get that 80% grant. So a lot of these projects, the state put up 10%. So then you only come up with 10 with, you know, your company or, you know, your university or whatnot. And so that helped quite a few of the projects. My county got one. The university based in my town got one to cover like a 7-county area. The state itself got one. Theirs is mostly going along interstates to kind of rebuild their own network. You know, there's been several projects built out there with partial state funds. And then, you know, when there was money left in the pool at the end, they said, you know, what can we do with this? You know, it's been, you know, earmarked for broadband, so we can't, you know, pay back our pensions or pay our bills. So what they did is they started up a what they call the Gigabit Challenge. I think they had $6 million available for people to apply to. And they didn't really give a lot of specifics, but when we referred with the Gigabit Challenge that you need to provide gigabit service, and it was to like 1,000 homes. And so they haven't doled out all that money yet, but, you know, they've given out grants to 3 towns to, you know, put out, you know, gigabit internet services. Now some, I think most of them so far have just been either low key or, you know, doing kind of a fiber to a neighborhood wireless, kind of a fiber WISP hybrid deal. You know, there's, you know, they're claiming 32,000 people served. I'm like, there's only 6 million available. You can't serve 32,000 people with $6 million worth of fiber. Yeah, you know, they've, you know, they keep finding ways to, spend our money.
Of course they will. So I think, was it the first time I met you in person, Mike? You had 2 phones, one in each hand, one for each of, I have a feeling I'm going to dig up that picture and, we'll make some quick memes out of it. It'll be brilliant.
Yeah. Down in Vegas, I had 2 phones. And then last year, we were in New Orleans. I had 2 phones. I think we got a couple. I posed for some pictures there with my 2 phones. But
and so now you're carrying 3. You've upgraded.
No. It's, I used to have 3 about 3 years ago. I had 3 for about 6 weeks. Because I still wanted the Nextel walkie-talkie, but then having 3 phones was just a pain, so I
don't
just
don't they make an app for that?
Yeah, but it would like it was never as good as Nextel. Like there has never been a walkie-talkie service that was as good as the Nextel because the underlying wireless protocol was built to do it.
This sounds like an excuse to me.
Oh yeah, it is.
Yeah, I'm not buying it.
See, you know, being the old guy I am, I miss they call them the dual NAM phones back in the day before digital. You could actually get a phone which was basically 2 SIM cards in it. So you'd have dual numbers, dual services, everything in one phone.
It's I think that's starting to come back now. I've seen a lot more phones coming out with dual SIMs. I think some of it's for international travel since that's becoming a little bit cheaper. You can pop in a SIM from that country. But then also, I think a lot of the prepaid stuff, if your prepaid account one runs out of money, you can just switch over to prepaid account two without, paying an overpriced, upcharge.
Yeah, yeah. They have a lot of those. I've seen a lot of the ones where they can actually let you put in two SIM cards in a phone that takes one. There's a lot of little bits and pieces you can, you buy them off eBay, you cut up your existing SIM cards and slide them both in. There's a little circuit that sits against them. So to allow people to use two SIM cards and switch between them, you have to repower the phone, basically. But just for people that want to use multiple ones. Or the other one I've heard of recently is apparently they're, VMware and a bunch of those sort of companies are looking at how they can partition off a phone so that you have a work phone and a home phone running on the same device, which to me makes sense. No one wants to carry three or four phones for different tasks. You want one phone, but you don't want to have to give people your own number. So should be interesting.
I would want to have three or four phones, maybe even six.
Yeah. But... I'm just waiting for them to just embed one in here or something. So, how's it going? Or the old shoe phone.
That'd be brilliant. You catch a call right after you get out of the bathroom. You'd have to put it on speaker.
Phone's all wet. Give me a second.
Put it on speaker and it comes out of your belt buckle. So you just talk to your penis.
Oh, no.
That'd be brilliant. Anyway, coming back around, let's see, picking up, let me look at my blog. I basically haven't done anything in the last 2 or 3 months. I'm not going to lie, I have been very unproductive, but let's see, recently I've been doing some stuff with high-density wireless deployments, specifically with the UniFi stuff, and pre-existing Cisco networks. I found a way to kind of in mass shut down a bunch of radios and wireless for Cisco. And then Ubiquiti, that's a feature I'm really pushing. Hopefully they'll add that, the ability to shut off the radios in the UniFi software itself. So imagine, if you will, say, for example, you're in an arena, say that plays basketball. Just throwing that out there as a possibility. Who knows? You never know.
Who knows? It could happen.
So say they change for different events, right? So if they're doing a concert in there, you need wireless on the floor. But say if they're actually playing a basketball game, you don't want just that wireless blasting down on the floor because it's not going to attenuate. It's just going to bounce off the floor and then disrupt everything else. So if you could create a group within UniFi, and when it's a concert, say, okay, well, enable these radios. And then when the concert's over, say, disable these radios. That would be so nice. But right now, inside of UniFi, you can't actually turn radios on and off. You can tell it not to broadcast SSIDs on an individual radio basis, but the radio's still on. So I found a way. I just made a little auto script that SSHs into the devices and just does an IF config shutdown on the wireless interface.
Okay.
So you can do it in mass or just do a couple at a time on and off. Makes it kind of convenient. Let's see, what else have I put up? Put up that one on the NVR, the new AirVision 2, the little hardware device, which is cool. We already talked about that one. And then I just did one on Tamograph, the site survey software, because I have been doing so many deployments lately. And I've been doing a lot of philanthropic work too, which I'm super excited about. Actually,
Greg.
Do what?
Good guy, Greg.
Well, no, it's like the way I look at it is, in IT we kind of toil in anonymity our entire career. Nobody ever sees us or anything like that. Or I have done some work. In kind of my consulting life for nonprofits. It's basically, I'm going to say this on the air, hoping that none will ever see this, but anytime a nonprofit would contact me, I would never charge them. I would always do the work. And then at the end, I would just say, take your team out for you know, drinks or something like that, with the money you would have given me, you know, put it back into something that's really worthwhile. And so all that stuff was always across the country. You'd never actually get to see it, you know, but with this, they do so much help in the community, so much work in the community, and I actually get to go and do it and see the fruits of that labor. It's like, it's completely different. I'm really excited to do it, you know, and help. And so, mostly I'm getting to do schools. So, actually I've got 7 schools on my roster for this summer. I say this summer because everybody wants to do it before the kids get in.
Yep. So I used to work for a school corporation.
Yeah, I've got roughly 70 days to do 7 schools. And I'm basically outfitting them with Ubiquity products, which is terrific, you know, to be able to.
How did you get that deal?
How did I get that deal? All right, so I got a new job. Yeah. I don't work for the data center anymore. I'm no longer the engineering manager. I still do consult for them a little bit if they need it, which is great. So I can still kind of feel like, you know, I help them and everything. Still kind of feel connected. I have data center services from them, so like my website and stuff like that, and the random junk I do actually comes out of there still, which I don't know. It's kind of that was kind of
remind them. They might have forgotten.
No, I just got a bill, so trust me, they remember. but I like that because that was kind of my baby, you know, growing all that stuff and building all that stuff. So it's nice to still feel connected. But I got what Mike would call up there in Chicago an offer I couldn't refuse. So I'm working in Memphis, Tennessee, and which is funny because anytime somebody sees me, or they don't know me down here, obviously, because I've only been here for such a short time, is they're like, "Oh, you're new. Why are you here?" It's like nobody can imagine why you would come to Memphis, Tennessee for anything. They're like, "Oh, I got a new job," and they're like, "Oh, yeah, that's great." You know, and they're nice and friendly, and then they say, "Well, where do you work?" And I'll say, "Well, I work for the Memphis Grizzlies, which is the NBA team down here." And their eyes get big, and then suddenly they're your best friend. And so I've never had so many friends so fast. So to say I'm a bit guarded is kind of an understatement. I try not to broadcast that actually until I get to know somebody. But the community here, I mean, it's actually, don't read Wikipedia. Wikipedia is just, it'll scare you, you know. But the environment down here is really great. Tons of great people. I mean, just amazing people down here, especially at the Grizzlies. I've never worked with so many great people. Like, what was that? I was telling somebody that if they were any nicer, I'd have to call them mom. because, you know, they're always willing to help you with anything and just, you know, do you need anything? Can I do anything for you? I'm not accustomed to it. So it's really great working with those guys. But as I'm sure some of those people out there know, the Memphis Grizzlies, the principal owner is Robert Pera, who owns Ubiquity. So I'm doing a lot of work with Ubiquity equipment now, obviously, which is great, man, because not only do I get to work with the hardware, so I get the new stuff and I get to implement it, but I'm also getting to work with the engineers. And again, they're engineers, just like the people here, man. They're really great guys, really dedicated guys. I mean, just it's been a great experience so far working with all of them. And I told myself I wanted to do at least one thing, which would be suggest an idea or kind of come up with a solution for something and have them actually integrate that into a product. And I've already made suggestions that I think have already made it into products. So that one thing's done.
That's awesome.
So I've only been here a couple of months now, but I guess I can go ahead and quit because I got that one thing out. Sorry.
Done. that's awesome. Like you getting to try out those new sort of things and. So what you would say that you have a scope where you can just basically say these products we want to use these in a new and exciting way and kind of test them out. Is that what you'd say the role is?
Well,
outside of day to day keeping everything running.
Well, number one project that I'm working on is doing the wireless deployment inside of the arena. And it was something, I guess until you work on a project like that, it's hard to really understand all of the, just the scope of it, you know, all the things you run into. I mean, everybody knows about 2.4 only has three non-overlapping channels, you know, and 5 gigahertz, you've only got so much spectrum to work with, you know, so that, you know, in a normal ops environment, that's not such a big deal. It's not really that hard, you know, but when you come into an arena, say a normal outdoor arena, those radio waves, they're going to go through the roof, right? Or they're going to hit the field and absorb in the field, and then the human body too. You know, we're great big bags of meat and water, which attenuates the signal really well. But as soon as you put a lid on that arena and you swap it out for a hard floor, then it becomes a big echo chamber, and it works just like, you know, the radio bounces around just like sound will. So it gets really hairy. I guess if you want to get down to it, when that place is empty, I can put an access point right dead center of the court with an omnidirectional antenna, and I can go anywhere in that arena and I can pass traffic on that access point. So that gives you an idea of how well the signal travels in there. So once you put human bodies in there, it helps, right? It zones the signal. But still, any radio you put that's visible, you have line of sight to every single person in there. So that means, say, once you crunch the numbers, you're going to end up with something like 75 to 100 access points. It's going to happen, right? So if you think... you 33 times you're going to have to do channel reuse in 2.4. So a good chunk of that arena is going to be on the same frequency with you. So even if you can orient, you know, if you can tighten those cell sizes down, so say you get some really narrow panel antennas, say 30 degrees, and you're shooting down, everybody else can still see you. So you may not be interfering with the other APs around you, but all of those clients on the same channel that are interacting with other access points are still, you know, it just gets so hairy in there. So it's like you have to try and come up with interesting ways to mitigate that. And so you have to do as much research as you can. But since there's only a handful of stadiums really out there, there's not a whole lot of educational materials out there. So you have to try and read absolutely everything you can, get rid of all the marketing hype, throw that in the trash, and try and see what everybody's really doing.
You know? Find out what's actually going on.
Ugh, and so it's so cumbersome.
Do you do a lot of control in other spectrums as well? Like, is there? I presume there would be some restrictions on what sort of transmitting devices people can bring into those sort of events. It's like maybe the media guys more than just the crowds themselves. But
well, most of the media guys actually stay in a media room. So they don't even go out in the arena. You learn a lot of weird, interesting facts when you start working in these places. So most of the media actually is never even in there. There's kind of a media area, and most of those guys have laptops. You know, that's basically what they're going to operate off of. And so they're going to get good reception. Wherein the average fan has got one of these. They got a smartphone. And at least 50% of all the smartphones out there are still operating in the 2.4 frequency. They have no 5 gigahertz capability, which means that's going to be there for a while. It also has to do with your demographic, too. It's crazy. All these things change. So early in the season, the tickets are cheaper, right? So you're going to have usually kind of a less affluent crowd. So they may not have the newest generation of phone that supports 5 gigahertz. So you're going to have a lot more 2.4 early in the season. And then with the Tigers games, because not only do they do the Memphis Grizzlies in there, but the local college team actually plays in that arena too. So that's a completely different demographic there too. It's a lot of older folks actually that come to the games. So they're older phones for the majority of the people there. So as the season progresses, and that ticket price gets a little bit higher, you see the more affluent people come in with the newer phones, and so that phone demographic changes over to the 5 gigahertz stuff. It's crazy. Yeah. It's crazy. And then different seating sections will actually have kind of a different demographic of phone, I've noticed, too. So it's wacky. And then most of the people are actually iPhones. The majority of everything I see is iPhone out there. And iPhones do this – and well, you know what? Most phones do this cute thing where they send out probes. They're like – hey, the access point that I connect to at home is Bob's house laptop or, you know, whatever.
Oh, so it says, hey, is Bob's house laptop out there?
Yeah, yeah. Every so often they send out a probe, usually every minute or two. They send out a
beaconing.
Yeah. So they're probing. They're saying, hey, are you out there? Are you out there? So even if they don't connect to your access point, you've got 5,000 phones that they're constantly probing. So they're sending stuff out in your spectrum that everything has to listen to.
It's interesting you mentioned that.
That was a big deal at the last Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
That specific issue you mentioned with the beaconing, I was recently speaking to one of the Australian companies that does that sort of high-density wireless deployments as well, called Zerus Wireless.
Yeah.
They're in the US as well. I was speaking to the US guys. They have one of the modes they can put one of their APs into is what they call this honeypot mode.
Yep.
That basically goes out and looks for those beacons and is like, hey, that Bob's home wireless network, I've got that over here. And it encourages the phone to connect up and then just terminates that to nowhere. So the phones all now have that basic IP sense thing where they're like, can I get to the internet from this link? Can I get to the internet from this link? Yeah, and if you can't get to it over the wireless, they'll normally they'll prompt you and say you need to log in, or they just won't use the wireless to continue, even though they'll stay connected. So this sort of honeypot thing they're working on is to decrease that sort of beaconing and trick a whole bunch of those units to connect.
It's funny that you
can see who else comes out with those.
It's funny that you mentioned that, because I actually talked to those guys and asked them, hey, do you have any real world number savings on that? And so during the playoffs, I actually did packet captures from all of the arena. And so I took my packet captures, and in Wireshark, I made a filter that showed me just those probes. And I filtered out all of my SSIDs. So I really just pulled up, you know, Bob's home laptop probe, and then Linksys probe and D-Link, all that stuff. And it really only accounted for somewhere between, depending on what capture I did, 1.5 to about 2.5% of all overall traffic. So it's really, they said it can save you somewhere between 20 and 40%. That's a bit of an exaggeration if you look at it, your overall spectrum. So, but it's an interesting idea. It was so interesting, in fact, that I decided to figure out how to do it on my own. So there's a project out there called Pineapple, and it's this little hardware device. Yep. And there's even one called the Blue Pineapple that you can load on these little TP-Links. And so basically all it really does is it runs, it's not AirMon, it's one or the other. It's part of the air cracking suite, but it basically runs an AP and just responds to all probes and grabs them. And so it's actually, if you load up Backtrack, which I may have a copy of on my laptop right now, you know, just for testing purposes, obviously. And then you throw on your alpha USB right there. You can actually duplicate the functionality pretty easily. So all you need is a Linux box and a compatible card, and you can duplicate that honeypot feature really easily. But and that may have been one of my suggestions to the Unify guys. But right now they're working on a lot of other optimizations, which is really great, because if you can figure out an optimization somebody's been doing in software, you can have that implemented, you know, just given enough time. And so really we just looked at the packet captures and saw what was flying around. So like RTS, CTS traffic, part of the management suite, that's actually optional. And coming out of some of the APs, you could see a good chunk of the traffic was actually that. And so you can just eliminate that altogether. One thing that I don't know if it's going to happen or not, but the beacons that your access points, by default, they all send them every 100 milliseconds. So that's 10 beacons per second. If you think about it, you want that high rate if people are roaming, if they're moving around. But think about it like this. If you go to an arena and some guy goes and sits down in his seat, he's not roaming.
He's not going to roam.
It doesn't matter. So you don't need that high rate of beacons. You could cut that in half. Or you know what, you could cut your beacons down to once every second, and it would save you 10% of that traffic, which is a huge portion of the traffic if you think about it.
One every second, and stagger them through your APs. I mean, that seems like it would cover it as well.
Because if you pull up your phone and you're looking for an open AP, if you do it one every second, it's going to take you at least 3 seconds to look in your list. So you're going to have all those guys propagate through. So if you think about it, it's a huge savings in spectrum, because anytime these guys are beaconing, everybody in that frequency range that hears it has to stop and listen and get ready to respond. So that's a huge saving. So it's really just trying to drill down into the protocols, how they function, and look for optimizations in any way you can. Because
I'd be really interested to see some of those. If like I know, obviously doing this stuff for your work, if you're able to post some of those, do like a sort of breakdown of where the majority of the traffic is coming from. And because you already mentioned, like, that's 1-2% is the beacons, and then how much is the actual access points, and then how much is user data, user retransmits and things like that. It would be very interesting to see what that looks like in such a dense environment.
Yeah. And you know what? It also it completely changes depending on where you're at. So if I was in, the Pacers Stadium in Indiana, we actually, our arena is modeled after theirs. If we go there, since it's an entirely different demographic, and entirely different set of phones, environment situation is going to be different. If I went to Miami, I'm willing to bet those people, the majority of those guys can afford the newest phone, right? If you look at the Memphis Grizzlies, this is one of the smaller markets, so they don't have as much money to spend, so you're going to have slightly older generation of phones. So it's going to be really different no matter where you go. But beyond that, once you do the packet captures, you pull it off the wire, or actually out of the air. Something interesting that I found was in these normal environments, you're getting so much interference, so many retransmits, that sometimes my packet captures, sometimes the traffic would be 60% of all the traffic was retransmits, which is pretty crazy. And sometimes in these captures, I would see as little as 5-10% of all overall traffic flowing through the air makes it to the wire. So 90% of all that RF floating around never actually makes it to the wire itself. So it's pretty interesting.
Ah, okay.
So that's crazy.
It's really nuts. Because when you get in these high density environments, you have so much RF in just management control floating around, because it's bouncing around, you know? And so how do you start to control that? And so one of the things that I've seen a lot of people doing, and what I'm starting to try and do myself, is underfloor mounting of your antenna. So instead of putting everything above and shooting down, you actually put it underneath the precast concrete to shoot through them. So in those precasts, and I'm sure I'll do some kind of breakdown of this stuff at some point, but this is just what I'm testing now. The precast comes in these big sections, right? And the seats are on top. And so if you put the radio inside here, you're getting 15 to 20 dBs of attenuation when it tries to go through the next section. So if you think about it, three sections away with that much attenuation going sideways, your radio waves are going to dissipate so much that it's not going to interfere on the AP level. But then also, sure, those people sitting above, their cell phone antennas only have enough power to penetrate so far through the concrete. So as you move sideways, you have to go through all those human bodies. Then you have to go kind of diagonally through the concrete, through another precast section to get to me. So it really starts to narrow that cell size down, makes it a lot quieter.
Nice.
But then again, 2.4 propagates pretty decently through there. But the 5.8, obviously, that smaller sine wave, it's never the wavelength, it's not going to penetrate nearly as well. So you have to kind of stagger your 5.8. You have to put your 5.8 a little bit more densely in there than you do your 2.4. And then the environment changes. So when that place is empty, it's running hot. So no matter where I'm at, I can see everything. And then as soon as I start stacking bodies in there, they start absorbing the signal, and then I can really test. So you can kind of only really test during season, right?
To get a good test.
But they don't really want you to mess everything up during the season. So
some sort of dynamic power control could be introduced there.
And there are some vendors that utilize there's so many technologies. Let's see, there's Channel Fly, which is like Cisco, or is that a Rubens?
Ruckus is the Channel Fly.
Yeah, so they do channel selection.
A lot of that at the moment.
Automatic channel selection. So they'll even do non-standard channel selection. So sometimes they'll choose channel 2 or channel 4, weird things like that, depending on the environment. And then, yeah, auto power. Some guys do beam forming. Some people do beam steering, frequency steering, wherein if your phone is capable, say you've got a new iPhone that does 2, 4, and 5 gigahertz, if this AP sees a probe from both of those frequencies, or if it'll see it from one, it might wait just a second to see if it comes from the other frequency, and if it comes from the preferred frequency, it'll ignore that 2.4.
Respond on the preferred.
Yeah, which is really great.
Pushing people away from that 2.4.
Mm-hmm. And then some people are doing things like if the client signals under a certain threshold, say the client comes in at -81, then they'll let them sit there for a couple minutes, then they'll dump them once. And they'll drop that client, hoping that they'll reassociate with a better AP, you know. But
that's why I like using like the microticks for hotspots, because you write rules. Hey, if you can't meet this minimum signal level, you don't connect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's some people that take control of the radio, the receive input level. So if you're not at a certain signal level, you completely get ignored. So yep. You don't really interfere with me anymore at that point, because your signal level doesn't meet my threshold. So I just completely disavow you at all.
And you can't drag me down.
Exactly. Yep. So there's a lot of different tweaks and tuning that people can do, which is great, because we're going to be there in no time.
You need it.
In this environment, yeah, you almost have to have all that stuff. But all of these cool tricks and things you can do to your access point mean absolutely nothing to the client. The clients don't give a crap what you're doing. They're going to, you know, because if you think about it, they're an island unto themselves. They're going to use as much power as they want. You know, they're going to be in whatever frequency they want. They're going to kind of pick whichever access point they want to connect to. So it's kind of a difficult environment, because you do as much as you can for the AP to segregate all that stuff out. But then you still have to deal with the client and his signal levels.
Who are going to do what they're going to do.
Exactly. So it's this weird tightrope that you kind of have to walk to get all this stuff in there. So,
and it's always changing.
Ever changing.
It's like
ever evolving.
With regular clients.
So that, I don't know. And you can't, you know, if you can't necessarily add more APs, because then you introduce more interference. You can't necessarily lower the signal level on your access points, you know, to shrink your cell size. If you lower the signal level, your modulation rate, how fast you can actually send traffic, directly relates to how strong your signal is. So sometimes if your signal's stronger, you know, it may theoretically interfere with these other people, but people are able to transmit so much faster that they're just using the spectrum less.
Able to retry faster.
Exactly. So you gotta kind of surf it and feel it out. And one of the cool things that I found, looping back to the packet captures, is MetaGeeks. They make this product called IPA. Yeah, the guys that do the Y-Spy that I happen to have, that a fellow named David, a really cool guy named David, was nice enough to let me borrow. So the Y-Spy is a spectrum analysis device. What it does is it sniffs the frequency. It's not looking for like SSIDs and stuff like that. It doesn't give a care in the world about that stuff. Look at me keeping this PG. It doesn't care at all what SSID you're doing. It's just looking at the spectrum itself. So you can find noisy devices, any sources of interference that might be causing problems. And a cool thing about that too is it's got some kind of matches in there, so it'll try and tell you sort of what the source of interference is. So it can kind of tell you that it's a microwave or a little wireless camera or something like that. But they also make something called IPA, which is a software package for packet captures. So you load your packet capture in there, and it makes these little tree views. It looks like a target. And so it'll be like around the center of the target will be access points, right? It'll be like a little portion. And so you can hover over that access point, and then it'll show you all the clients on that access point. You can hover over the client, it'll show you how much traffic. And then you can break down the types of traffic, and it'll show you how many retransmits really quick are coming off of each access point. It makes it really easy to kind of look at that stuff. When you want to get a lot hairier with filtering, like trying to figure out how many probes are coming from unwanted devices and stuff like that, you really have to go back into Wireshark and get in there and build some filters. But other than that, IPA is like a really quick, cool way. The only thing with that is
something's easy to read it all.
Oh yeah, you only get it for 2 weeks, and I can't remember how much it costs, but it's really interesting.
$4.99 or something. I'm looking at. I'm looking at the site now.
$500 is kind of expensive for that. But it's really nice.
I was going to say, if it saves you, like, you consider the cost of an access point versus something that's going to tell you if you're able to cut two access points out of your build or when you're upgrading.
I got to, you know, I'm just...
Seems like a drop in the bucket.
I'm stuck in this mindset of this place where I've never had any money for anything, so it's hard for me to break out of that. You know, it's like you whip a dog for so long and he just starts shying away from everything. But yeah, it definitely, whenever you're working in an environment like this with this many things, you have to have a toolkit, you know, and it's gotta be good stuff. And so that IPA, I think, is a really awesome tool. Another one, looping all the way back to where this started, was the Tamograph site survey. It really allows you to take a floor plan, load it into this program. And then as long as you have a compatible Ethernet adapter, like a wireless adapter, which you can get relatively inexpensive, you can walk around doing site surveys. So you can click everywhere you're standing on the map, or you can just click and then walk at a smooth rate and then click every time you turn, and it will kind of create a heat map and then show you your signal levels, signal interference, signal noise. And it, for me, at first it was just so frustrating working with all this stuff because I was using, you know, my phone. I was just checking signal levels as I move around. But really trying to explain it to anybody else or have it in any kind of repeatable format.
Readable format.
It's such a pain.
Yeah, something that you can show somebody that, what's RF, dude?
It isn't just a bunch of lines going up and down.
Yeah, so it's very tangible. It creates reports that are really easy for management to see. Plus, since I'm doing so many of these schools and I'm outfitting them with wireless, I can take their floor plans, put the building material in what the walls are really fast. I mean, it's like super fast to do this. And I could start placing access points, and it'll actually predictively tell me what the signal's going to look like in the environment. Which,
oh, nice.
I mean, it is like, literally, I can load, because I did one school already, and I did the entire school, all four floors, in about 20 minutes on a predictive survey. And that's with manipulating, moving around, getting the signal levels the way I wanted. And I've already done a little bit of testing, and it actually, with predictive versus reality, you know, what it looks like when you really install stuff, and it comes out pretty close. So, I mean, to me, a 10% margin of error is perfectly adequate. You know, that's because it's wireless, so the environment is going to absolutely change anything. You know, I can't account for all the furniture that happens to be in the room or human bodies and stuff like that. So
how many? Yeah.
Yeah. So the predictive nature of it is just, it's invaluable to be able to whip that out and doing seven schools. Theoretically I can do all of them in a single day.
At least have a pretty good idea. Yeah.
So I can spec how many access points I want, plus or minus one or two. And then, you know, I can just not even think about it, move on, and do the rest of it. The rest of it's the hard part, you know, figuring out where to place cameras, putting out quotes for labor, you know, putting parts, materials, all that stuff together. That's the pain in the butt part, you know. So I don't even have to think, using the Tamograph stuff, I don't even have to think about the wireless. Going through and doing the surveys after the fact, super easy. But in like this huge environment, I can't imagine how in the world I would do any of this stuff without it.
Cool.
I have seen there is some other companies that make them, like Air Magnet. And Air Magnet comes in at about $4,000 to do the same stuff. And again, I cringe so hard when I hear that number. It just eats me alive. And then there's some other ones that are less expensive, but don't do like the predictive and some of the other features that I'm really, really liking this. And there's some still that do the same things, but cost more. And another cool thing is this Tamograph actually integrates with the Wi-Spy. So you can have your sniffer card you can have your Y-Spy in there, and it'll actually, while you're doing active surveys, it'll actually capture the spectral analysis in the same areas everywhere you're going. So not only can you look at signal level, but you can check spectral analysis in different areas too, all from one interface. This is pretty neat.
Cool. Yeah.
Sweet. Well, I think Andrew's got a run on us, don't you?
Yeah. I gotta head out. I've overstayed my lunch, so. But I think we were well overdue for a longer show and a longer catch up.
Yeah. I think we need to do just one with Andrew where he just talks about all the cool stuff he does.
Yeah, that'd be good.
We'll call it Andrew's Hour. We'll do it once a week.
This is how you take vitamin D.
This is
this end, not this end.
You learned that one the hard way, huh?
They say the sun shines out my ass.
No meaning the down under, huh?
Wow. They say everything's upside down there, so this makes sense.
I'm gonna roll out and catch you guys later.
All right, Andrew. Thanks for coming, man.
No problem. See you.
Bye. So, alas, Andrew's gone. Just the Americans left. But yeah, see, I can just babble on about this stuff forever, because it's just so complex. There's so much to it, you know. And it's just, and I love this because it's new challenges, new tools, new environments. It's great. It's everything that kind of feeds it. Like I was telling somebody, I've worked since the day I've got here. I've worked 10 or 12 hours every day, 7 days a week since I've gotten here. And I haven't had this much job satisfaction in forever. Like, I'm completely happy with it. Good. Which is great. I just need to knock out this wireless project, and then I get to move on to just more cool stuff. You know, beyond that, I'm sure I'll get to do some interesting things with MFI, and I have no doubt there's going to be an edge router in there running the place, and you know, just all that stuff. all the pieces will come together.
Yep.
Speaking of edge router, I saw today, or they may have announced it sooner, but I only saw it today, was that they announced edge router PoE. Did you guys see that?
Yeah,
I saw that in their email. Yes.
Yeah, that was cute. So it looks like kind of like a 5-port. It's basically they took the regular edge router light and then added tough switch into it, right?
Yeah, it's a tough switch with routing.
Yeah,
that's kind of how I looked at it.
Yeah. So
I know several folks who are doing, you know, camera installations, and they're doing tough switches, you know, just for the PoE clutter. Well, now if you could get an edge router, you know, there's one device at the premises that, you know, you don't have to have a separate router.
Yeah, I can see this is a great little tower router too now.
Yeah.
You know, with the 5 ports, all PoE, you can power all your radios, your backhaul, and then your sectors, all from one device.
I mean, where are people, Mike, do you know where people are buying these? Everybody I ever call, we don't have them.
I get emails from a boatload of different vendors, and the regular edge routers haven't been on as many of them. I think I've seen them on, like, Microcom. I think Baltic's had them a couple times. I
want to find one because I keep getting people, I've bought it and I've tried it, but I don't understand it. So I just kind of, you know, threw it in the back. And that's, you know, I've heard that from about 5 or 6 people now. Hey, I wanted to try this. I got it, didn't know what to do with it. And okay, I moved on.
Right. Yeah. There's some critical features for me that they don't have yet. So yeah, I have no interest in getting one at this time.
I know the edge router. I guess my perspective on it is they're really trying to make it just a router. And I know from its Viata background, it's going to route, you know, really well. Mm-hmm. It's going to stay really. And I guess the cleaner you keep it, the more solid it's going to be. But I don't know. You know, it seems like they're adding features in a little bit at a time, and the GUI is getting more complete, you know, with every update. the CLI is one thing that I've heard people say is that the CLI doesn't follow the GUI like at all. Like they're
that, I've heard that from one or two people as well. That
two entirely different animals.
Yeah, so I don't know. I don't know if I've heard this from anyone, like any operators that have used it, or if this was like a announcement, like, you know, back when it was announced that they said how it was going to be. But I was thinking that all the Viata feature set would be available in the CLI because it was just Viata's back end. And then they were just making the GUI to do whatever they wanted on top.
Yeah.
But if you understood Viata, you could get all those features day one because it was it was there.
I know Viata's like firewalling capability is pretty good, but doing that command line is gets a little hairy. So I know GUI was really important. I think they made their own PPTP package as well that Viata didn't have. I want to say. So they're adding some stuff that doesn't exist in Viata, which is cool.
Right. Yeah. It's, some things that people were talking about that they wanted was like a Mac Telnet type option, and Matt, I believe, said they're making one of those. They said that it's just straight, like, it's just a Debian or whatever back end, so but if you have that badly, load it yourself. But, like, you know, I'm waiting for, like, MPLS and things like that. You know, that's going to be a project, so, you know, I don't expect them to have that soon, because Viata doesn't have that, and MPLS is complicated. I believe I've seen that there are some open source MPLSs out there, but they're not that good. That you know you've got the traditional Juniper, Cisco, Alcatel type guys that have it, and then MicroTik seem to have built their own MPLS because they had feature sets available before the open source guys had them. So either they licensed it from somebody else or they built their own. So this kind of seems to be what they're going to do here is license it from somebody else or build their own. And due to the price points, I can't imagine them licensing it for any reasonable amount of money.
Well, and the thing with MPLS is everybody's like, well, you know, MPLS, you know, and people are like, well, I think I need it. Well, why do you need it? I want to do this. Well, you can already do that without, you know, doing MPLS. And the folks who are doing MPLS with, you know, very valid reasons are the big folks.
Yeah.
You know, the big carriers, the big backbone providers. And they're not going to use open source. They're going to use something that they can call somebody up at 2 a.m. and, hey, I got a problem. Okay, 20 minutes later, we got a bug fix for you.
Yeah, in the MPLS stuff, a lot of people, what I see, they're like, well, we've got one customer that's got multiple sites. We want to do that. I was like, well, you know, I mean, why not just do a standard tunnel?
Any flavor of tunnel.
Yeah, why redesign your entire infrastructure for one client that's got two sites? You know, it's going to work just fine with a standard tunnel. Just look at all of your options first. Don't just jump on the buzzwords.
Right. And then, you know, for a lot of things, you know, your standard tunnels are all right, but you know, as you're saying, you know, got, you know, a couple clients with a couple sites, but you know, like in my case, you know, I'm looking at going for, you know, bigger stuff.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
A lot of clients, lots of sites.
And it definitely makes sense in your circumstance. I'm not trying to say that, but it absolutely does make sense in your case. And then a lot of other cases I've seen some people doing, you know, like sites in multiple countries, even stuff like that. It definitely has valid uses for that.
Something else that, you know, I like, with those, I can't remember the name, Performant Networks. Is that who has those new, like traffic management boxes that go at the towers? I believe that theirs is just based on some version of Pure Ethernet, but someone else was saying that you know, with MPLS and MPLS TE, that you can emulate a lot of that same traffic flow management stuff. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, MPLS has distinct advantages.
Yeah,
but in huge environments.
Yeah.
You know, like if you're,
like your center boost that's not that has a bridge network, it probably is not going to be needing MPLS anytime soon because they're not. You know, they obviously don't have that level of demand to create that.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm still dealing with, you know, I got 3 calls today. Hey, I got a bridge network, you know I need to go to routed. What do I do? And, you know, these are, you know, very, very good running networks. And they're just, you know, they're not going to need MPLS.
Right, yeah. Yeah, it's, you know, if you're residential focused, you know, if you're not, you know, like in Formal Guide you talk about, you know, you've got multiple links to the same destination with multiple different bands, you know, see, you know, adapting to which, you know, good link conditions, bad link conditions, you know, if you're not to the point where that you know, we need to worry about that kind of stuff, you know, it's, if you have a, 50 or, you know, 100 meg service to your whole network, you know, you don't need to worry about balancing multiple rockets because a single rocket can carry your whole network anyway.
Yeah. That's like I deal with some people sometimes that say, well, we want to put in all gigabit switches. And say, okay, well, what do you guys do? And like, well, we have everything hosted out in the cloud. We use Google Docs for everything. Well, what's your internet connection? We got 20 megs. It's like, what do you need a gigabit for? Just curious. So it's kind of, yeah, it's one of those things. A little bit of overkill. Don't buy into the
We should do a podcast on, oh, like the, you know, the performant networks and all the, you know, the whiz bang gadgets, you know, the stuff that, you know, is the add-on that, you know, does it really work? You know, does it, you know, if you add this in, what's it supposed to do?
That'd be cool. Maybe we can convince those guys to give you stuff to actually install.
Yeah, give us some stuff to test with, and you know, because I know there's several products that, you know, like the performant networks things. There's several other optimization type of you know, drop in boxes, you know, all that sort of thing.
Justin would be happy to torture his clients.
Yes. Yes. if Greg knows, I'll if Jessica's listening, I'll send them all to her and stress her out some more.
Oh golly. Oh man, let's not even talk about that right now. I don't even want to think about that stressful situation. But so one of the thing I noticed that they announced was their Air Gateway, and I think they demoed those in like 2012 somewhere.
Yeah, they've the Chicago one. They were talking about those there. I think it's a pretty neat project or product, but you know, it goes back to how close to the customer do you want to be as far as supporting something.
Yeah. Because normally, I mean, you stop at the jack. The PoE, as soon as it leaves, that's your. So this the Air Gateway is basically a little brick that snaps into the PoE that just runs a little lightweight access point so that they can use for in-home wireless. And so I guess it extends your responsibility beyond the jack through their access point at that point, I would imagine.
I mean, I can see the good and the bad. You know, you can see what the customer sees. I mean, I haven't used one, so I assume you can, you know, you can get into it and run utilities, you know, ping, you know, maybe some kind of, you know, bandwidth test, something, so you can, you know, you can see that. But, you know, you also, okay, you know, customer's going to probably go out and buy a router.
Yeah.
You know, especially your gamers, your techie people, they're going to want to mess with their own stuff. So, you know, you have to be selective about it, but then when you get selective about it, okay, we got a, you know, kind of a hodgepodge of stuff out there. Mm. So, you know.
That reminds me, it kind of makes me think of, I think it's Comcast, this new thing Comcast is doing. So they're installing these like Infinity modem things that have, they have like wireless built in. And so you can subscribe to like this Infinity service. And so whenever you're traveling, if you happen to be near somebody's house or somebody's residence or apartment that has that, they'll be broadcasting a secondary SSID off of there just for roaming clients. And you can connect to that guy's. So it basically turns it into like a giant hotspot network just all over the place. I think it's at least in theory, it's interesting, is it not?
It's interesting. I don't want, you know, the Unabomber sitting outside my house using my Comcast connection because he's, you know, on a cross country murdering rampage and needs to check his email.
That would be a hell of a commercial for him.
I see that kind of stuff rising up because you've got all these carriers that are now doing Wi-Fi throughout entire towns. You know, like, you know, down there in Austin, you got Time Warner that said, "Well, you know, we've got Google coming here, AT&T is trying to figure out how to do their gigabit. You know, what we're going to do is, you know, Wi-Fi throughout all of Austin for our customers." You know, you've got Comcast doing the same thing some places. You know, Cablevision thinks doing something similar in New York. So, like, in that case, it's like, well, you know, now they don't have to deploy access points hanging off of their coax system. They just, you know, build it into the modem. Mm-hmm. And I would imagine that they have it on a second, you know,
like a second
service, so it's not using your IP.
Right. Because
then that is a valid complaint. Then, you know, someone come over and, you know, download kiddie porn on your, you know.
I'm sure, if it's not segregated, then I'm just going to sit here and start sniffing all the traffic that happens to be coming across. Coming across my wire, I might as well look at it. But yeah, that absolutely makes sense. But I think that is like such a cool idea to leverage that infrastructure. Obviously, you know, I mean, it's going to take a while to get all those things swapped out, but still, the possibilities that it opens up, I think, are pretty neat.
I think part of it too is they're looking at possibly to monetize that for the cellular operators. With a lot of this hotspot 2.0, some of these other, I think I saw a site called Bandwidth X, I think it was, where their whole thing was on an on-demand basis, Wi-Fi providers, obviously they mean people like, you know, Boingo and, you know, I can't think of anybody else right now, but those kinds of guys can set rates, I think, based upon time and location, what it costs to use their Wi-Fi. And then these cellular guys have their own formula for if they need to use the Wi-Fi or not. And it's supposed to be like a meeting place where if the cellular company needs Wi-Fi bandwidth in the area because their cellular network is overloaded, then through this service, they can automatically force phones onto supported Wi-Fi networks
to
relieve the carrier load. And then obviously, you know, money trickles down, so your carrier, the, you know, bandwidth people, you know, the
supposedly in Europe that cell offload is getting really big, and I think what a lot of what it does is they'll have hotspots in just random public areas, and they'll broadcast, or they won't broadcast. They'll have a hidden SSID that's vendor specific. So, you know, like Virgin Mobile will have their own hidden SSID that comes off of tons of access points. So if your phone happens to roam within range, it'll automatically associate and then start data offloading through that hotspot. You know, so there's just such a huge disbursement of them. And I guess, yeah, so if, you know, if you happen to move 5, you know, gigabytes of traffic for Virgin Mobile this month, then they send you X amount of money or whatever for doing that offload service. So I think it's pretty cool. I don't know why we don't. Maybe we just, I don't know. Why wouldn't we do it here? I have no idea why we don't do it here.
I think it's just starting to be like an up and coming thing. Like the cellular guys, I think, didn't want to do anything. You know, didn't want to involve anybody else. Just wanted to keep all the money themselves. But then as bandwidth demand has exploded, they're like, we can't keep up with this and not piss off our clients.
Oh yeah, especially like in these arena environments, you see it for sure. Like it's high density. Until they started upgrading their DAS, their distributed antennas and stuff, cell coverage was virtually non-existent inside these areas. But then they get saturated so fast just from people being in there, just the sheer density of phones, you know, and just the constant stream of small amounts of data that it just overwhelms them. So if you can offload any of that stuff, these guys are just chomping at the bit for it. They're foaming at the mouth.
Well, get off a plane at any major airport and try to use your cellular data. Usually for the first couple minutes, you don't have anything.
Yeah. Because everyone that just got off the plane is, everything's syncing back up. You know, they're downloading new email, downloading new tweets, uploading pictures that they took while they were flying, and all that stuff's happening. In the Ubiquity forum, there's a lot of talk about high density deployments and stadiums and things like that. And people were saying, why is anyone using their cell phone? There's a game to watch. Well, apparently you've never gone to a game because that's what everybody does. They're on their phones or, watching YouTube videos. They're watching replays. They're taking pictures of their friends and,
Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and everything else.
Well, yeah. And, I think it travel over here to the futon that previous residents were happy enough to leave for. The bar stool I was sitting on. Everything's very temporary here. Just got to have it completely settled in. So anyway, I think the phones can enhance the experience, I just been diving so much into this stuff lately, but there's a lot of vendors out there that produce apps that are value add. So I think what people, and who was it? I think it's the guy that owns the Mavericks. I think he said he doesn't want an app. And he's like, I don't want people coming in and staring down at their phone instead of staring at the game, and I think that's valid, but I've seen some vendors that can really add some, as Americans, we get so accustomed to everything, just being right there at our fingertips and just force fed to us. We want to drive through, want to get that instant gratification. Yeah, so we get so used to seeing everything in front of the TV with that instant replay and that's commentary. So some vendors, what they're doing is some cool ones that I've seen, especially for people like you, Mike, you would really like it. One of the apps I saw on the phone, what it does is you can pull up the app and one of the sections, it shows the ice hockey rink, right? So it shows the two goals, the lines, all that good stuff. But then it shows a ton of little pucks, and every puck is a shot that somebody took. And you can click on a puck, and it'll show you a quick instant replay of that shot. Then there'll be one that's like a G, and that's a goal. You can click on it, see the goal. So what their systems do is it constantly records video, and then whenever they get, they subscribe to like a feed from the NHL. So anytime there's a goal, the NHL sends out this feed saying there's a goal by this team, and so they know which side the team's on. So the system automatically pulls that, goes from that timestamp, goes back about 15 seconds to see the lead up to the score, and then instantly makes that available for people to replay on their phone. So, if you're watching the game, you can just look down and then click and see that instant replay really fast. So it's just so cool. And then, be able to, you see a guy up there shooting, and you see this guy's, he's shooting free throws, for a foul. You can see how he performs against this team, statistics-wise. How is he performing right now? You can just look at him instantly and see that. Or, you see a certain matchup on the court. You have those stats of it. So I think it's value add. It's not something like you stare and watch it the whole game, but,
who's number 23?
Exactly. Exactly. I think
that guy's having a great game. I don't know who the heck he is.
He's never played this game. Traditionally against this team, he's never played this game before. Just things like that. I think people, it's extra little things you can do to kind of entice them in. So it's something you can't get when you're at home. That's the idea. It's something that you can kind of enhance the experience.
Yeah, like those announcers are saying these random, I think usually useless facts for a reason. Somebody wants to hear this.
Yeah.
Guy that wants to hear it, he will have that app and he will look up, how does he do against, he'll be able to delve further than just that quick 1 second, he has 37 at bats versus this guy. Okay, well.
Yeah, baseball is a great example there. Yeah, he's the first left-handed, 35-year-old, from Pittsburgh that's done this. they get that crazy in their stats. And, if you got an app that, what's special about this guy? People eat that up.
Yeah, I think it's pretty cool. It's It's definitely interesting. And then I think you have to have, you have to start out with a really good one like that. That's a framework that you can plug other pieces in, like concession stuff. So being able, so plug in a piece that you'll be able to order food from your seat, or they also have this thing called like Express Lane or something like that. So you can order from your seat, but then you can just walk up there and just pick it up and then go back to your seat if you don't want to necessarily have it delivered all the way to your seat. So just lots of cool things that you can snap in. But I think, obviously the underlying infrastructure has to be there. The wireless has to be good and solid. Yeah. I think to do the stream and video stuff, you need somewhere between 300 and 500K for a connection. And so that doesn't sound like much, but when you get to an environment like that, it's
the times 20, you know, even times 20, you know, then times 200.
Well, if you think about it, our stadium being kind of small, it seats about 18,500 people. So you have that many
times 2,000.
Right. So not everybody's going to be connected one. But then of the people that are connected, only a certain portion are actually going to be active at any one point in time. Then, you know, those people are hopefully going to be dispersed a little bit, so they won't interfere with each other, and then so you won't overload access points. So it's kind of this weird balancing act. But from the statistics I've seen from stadiums that actually do the in-app stuff, it gets adopted really fast. You know, the uptake on people actually getting the apps and using them, because they're coming out with really cool ideas to convince, you know, like incentive programs. So like you know, whenever I go to Lenny's and get a sub, I swipe my card and I earn points. It's going to be the same kind of thing in these stadiums. You know, you earn points for all these different things you do with it. So they really are doing a good job of getting people to stay engaged, you know, and integrate into your social media and all that stuff.
I like that. So, you know, if they're doing well at that moment, you know, that pops up, you know, you want to buy more tickets. Yeah, I'm having a great time. Let's buy more tickets right now.
Sure, man.
Well, hey, we've seen you've been here three times. You know, here's a bonus, you know.
Definitely. Loyalty program. I mean, it absolutely makes sense to me. And, you know, to me, I've been trying to kind of get into the psychology of the whole fan experience. Because I'm not, or at least I'm not traditionally a big sports guy. You can't work for a sports team and not get into it. I mean, that's just impossible, you know. so whether I expected to or not, I really got into it. You know what? I think half of it's just this place. Like, this is the biggest basketball town you could probably ask for. These people eat, breathe, and sleep this stuff. But you really can't help but get into it here. It's a lot of fun. I forgot where I was going with that. I started somewhere, and then the cat started jumping around. Confused me.
Now, as you know, like back to like wireless, you know, applications with this, do you see a benefit in future wireless specifications for there to be more control by the network of the wireless device?
Oh, you know, so now, instead of letting the client make so many decisions?
Well, I mean, you know, not only like what access point they're talking to, but also their transmit power. You know, everybody's talking full blast all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, how much of a benefit do you see? And, you know, again, earlier you said, you know, sometimes louder is better, but you know, how much benefit do you see in being able to tell the client, talk to this access point at this many dB, you know, do this, do that, you know, this IP is overloaded. You switch to this one. You know, I know a lot of the hosted or, you know, higher end managed systems, you know, the AP can suggest to the client do these things, but the client ultimately still does whatever it wants. Mm-hmm. As far as I understand,
I've seen some vendors that have a high density wireless product that is just a radical departure from normal environments, and they have kind of some tricks that they use to sort of mitigate some of those things. So like choosing which access point you connect to. I saw a manufacturer that basically has a switch, and that switch is actually a controller. And then all of the access points you plug in are really just radios, if you want to look at that. It's an extension of the whole. So whenever you, when they beacon out,
and then you answer that beacon with a probe, they'll actually see you answer on all of those access points, and it'll figure out which one you have the best signal at, and that access point's the one that responds. And
okay.
So you're just going to the one it chooses. Now, it still doesn't have any control over your signal level. You know, you're going to do kind of whatever you want. But it can control which access point you're actually communicating with, which is interesting. So really all you have to have is between your access points in an area, all you have to have is some collaboration between those. You know, if there was, even with like Unify, in theory, if on that initial session establishment, if all of the access points would just send back to the Unify controller, hey, this was the probe, this was my signal level, and then, you know, he waits some determined amount of time before it responds. You know, it could be, I don't know, 40 milliseconds, 50 milliseconds, something like that. And then just report back to whichever one had the best signal, then that access point could answer you from then on, and then you would be locked onto that one. I mean, it would work in the same fashion.
That's kind of how their new, zero handoff stuff works, that BSSID or whatever it is travels from one AP to the other depending upon what it thinks is the best one to talk to.
Yeah, from what I understand, it's the same BSSID and it's the same channel.
There's no physical switch.
Right.
It doesn't have to say, hey, I need to switch to another channel.
Yeah, so the handoff's a lot more seamless in that way. I'm not really sure mechanically, on the back end, how they get all that stuff working, but it does sound interesting. Everybody's kind of got their own little tricks for that stuff. But then again, yeah, if your client doesn't really feel like handing off from one AP to the other, you probably got problems. But it seems like I think Ubiquiti has mitigated that somehow. But again, you have to be on the same channel, like everything is the same channel. That doesn't really, for my application here, at least in this environment, that doesn't really work. Although there are some vendors that do single channel deployments, like even in big environments. So
it's interesting. Yeah, like the cellular networks are, they're a complete, control environment. They tell you what to do, as far as I'm aware. You do this, you do that. Okay.
Yeah.
This endured pretty well with, high speed handoffs and roaming and.
Well, I mean, I guess it would be whatever the next generation protocol is, if they want to put that much intelligence into it, which let's hope they do.
Yeah, I just assume more of these things where it's like, this has always been a problem. Well, why not just build it into the damn protocol?
Yeah.
Stop trying to figure out how to circumvent these problems. We've had N and AC both come out now after we've started having these problems, and yet no one's thought, let's get this in
there.
It
seems like it would be pretty standard. Like the access point would see your signal level and say, hey, can you go louder? Hey, can you be quieter?
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like it would be too difficult for it to keep track of that.
Must be harder than we realized, or else it'd be done.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess so. I wonder, I guess they're using Wi-Fi chips, right? That do all the offload, so that it's not like they're not having to do that in software, right?
It's just standard Wi-Fi, as far as I'm aware.
So it's all hardware-based, so it's not like the phone takes a hit for it.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know why they wouldn't do that. I don't know. Get on it, Mike.
Yeah. I'm going to join the IEEE tomorrow. And
speaking of, have you decided to make a run at the board yet or not?
I have not made any such decision. Probably haven't had time to think about the decision, so maybe that's my my indicator. Well, hello to your friend there.
It wouldn't be the internet without a cat.
Yeah. But I haven't made any decisions, but maybe the fact that I don't have time to make the decision is maybe an indicator that maybe I shouldn't.
You never know.
Yeah, just, hearing these guys talk about, spending 10, 15 hours a week on this stuff, I'm like, I don't have 15 hours a week to do anything.
Yeah.
So where am I going to put this? But, they all seem like the guys that, same situation, and they seem to get by, so.
Yeah, I mean, I think everybody recognizes that, you know, the board is a volunteer thing and, you know, okay, you know, yeah, you got to dedicate some time, but, you know, it's not like they expect that it's now your life.
Yeah.
I think it would be cool. I think you probably get a free shirt. I think you should go for it.
Get some nice rooms. Vegas.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah, you're going to be there anyway. You might as well be on the board. Why are you doing it? High roller. Getting a limo.
There we go.
Get the 5-star treatment. Speaking of, I think I'm going to try and go this year. Hopefully I can score a free entry from somebody. I'm willing to bet somebody will get me in free. If I ask enough people.
I bet so.
if I beg enough people, I'm sure somebody will let me in.
Well, I bet some people are going to be platinum sponsors and everything else. So, you know, that's always a handy thing.
That'd be nice. It'd be nice to do a little networking. Get out there and meet some people, talk to some people. I'm desperately trying to get in touch with some of the other IT guys at the other franchises. It seems it's kind of an interesting environment. These guys share ideas really well. Unless it has to do with basketball itself, then they're very secretive. But you know, if you're selling hot dogs in a really neat way, you know, they're really happy to tell you how they're doing it and all that stuff. And I'm pretty sure the IT is going to be fairly similar. There's one particular guy I've been trying to get a hold of, and he's just slippery. I can't get a hold of him. So, I think I got introduced to the guy who runs the Mavs IT department and stuff like that. He seems like a pretty cool guy. Probably try and grab a hold of some more of the other guys, see if I can't get something going with him. Never hurts to get a little collaborative effort going.
Yeah.
Well, you know, but I'm sure that if the Bulls or the Pacers need the assistance, you know, a couple of guys that might be able to.
The Bulls are dead to me because they're Aruba. I'm pretty sure they're Aruba anyway. And the Pacers, those guys, I know who those guys are, and they're dead to me too. You're dead to me, Pacers. Nah. I mean, I would be more than happy to talk to anybody. I definitely want to, because I the other side of the coin. I want to be able to help people too. I want to be a resource for them. So,
something that's on a fairly unrelated topic here. The past few days, I've been trying to figure out if anybody makes sector antennas that have ability for multiple radios to be attached. And I have had some vendors respond. IT Elite actually came back and said, well, tell us what you want. You know, we've had some other people ask this kind of stuff. Give us more feedback as to what exactly you want this to be. If enough people want it and it's easy enough for us, we'll do it.
Like a dual band sector? Is that what you mean?
Well, various things. You know, I've seen some that are dual band, you know, 5 gig and 2.4. But, you know, my thought was, you know, I haven't seen any 5 gig and 900. I haven't seen any that are just 2 5 gigs. Mm. You know, typically if you've got 5 gig, you know, you're going for, you know, high speed line of sight customers. 900 is almost the exact opposite. You know, you're trying to go through anything in the way. How nice would it be to just have one antenna? Because, you know, I'm starting to run out of places. Most places I go to, it's just one set rent per month. It's $150 a month or whatever. Doesn't matter what you put up there. It's been great so far. Just put up another antenna and away you go. Now we start to get more places where they charge you per antenna. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But you got to think a little more, well, you know, how am I going to plan this out to make the most, you know, best use of what I put up there? Well, if you put up one antenna that takes two radios, still just one antenna. But some areas I'm looking at for, you know, the business clients, you know, to really compete on the, you know, business broadband side, I need to be able to throw a lot of bandwidth out there. Well, the way to do that is if you have a lot of radios and then therefore a lot of antennas. IT Elite actually came back to me today. You know, I don't have any information on the antenna yet, they said that their Poland division actually has one antenna, or, well, one device that has two completely separate 5 gigahertz, you know, radiation elements in there that are both dual band. It's got four end connectors on it, so you can put two 5 gig radios on it. They told me it's 156 is the MSRP.
Interesting.
I'm like, I was expecting $500 or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know,
more, but, you know, 156.
That's the price of a normal sector.
But, yeah, so I'm thinking, you know, obviously if you got two radios that close, there's going to be a lot of, you know, interference between them just from being physically that close. So you have to use a sync system to help mitigate some of that.
Yeah, I was thinking you're going to get adjacent channel interference unless you, I mean, unless your frequencies are really far apart. But still, yeah, just the sheer strength of the other radio being that close, yeah.
Yeah, now, you know, if they have a product in shipping, obviously people are using it somewhere, somehow. Mm-hmm. But you know, my thought was, okay, you know, they've obviously done some of the engineering work already to solve some of these problems, I would hope. But, you know, if you had a synced system, whether, you know, well, there is a titanium GPS or Canopy or, you know, or the new memory link CTI stuff or whatever, you know, they're both transmitting at the same time. You know, you can put them much more close together because the APs will never interfere with each other. So that's, you know, I guess that, you know, could be a good way to get more bandwidth to a certain area with a single antenna, something like that.
It's interesting.
But, yeah, you know, Some people told me impossible, can't be done without spending big bucks on channel filters and all the, you know, all these other complicated things. And a few said, interesting, tell us more. But now IT Elite said, we got it. So, but, you know, they said, you know, because some were asking, well, you know, how many would you want to buy? You know, but now they have it, like, it doesn't matter how many you buy, just already make it.
Yeah. It's interesting. I wonder if they have anybody that's already using it there to let you talk to.
Yeah, it's, I mean, you know, I just got the email today, and if they're having to coordinate with Poland, well, then they're probably already asleep when I got it. So
yeah. I mean, they've got to have some references that you could talk to.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, it sounds, you know, like, you know, if you're really trying to get a lot of capacity in a given area, you know, you put more radios on the same number of antennas, you don't got big tower rent. My thought was, if my rent doubles or triples because I have that many more antennas on there, I'd better just go on double or triple the number of towers to service that same area to get more angles, different, you know, different vantage points. I'd rather have that, but, you know, if I can keep that tower rent down.
Hmm. And, sure.
And then, having something with 900 would be nice too, or, you know, 365 for those clients that, you know, have a tree in the way and you can't really get to them at a good signal on 5 gig, then you can, you know, have kind of a failover again without having to spend more money on rent.
900 and anything, man, that's going to be a huge antenna. You should do 900 and a 2.4 just to see how long you can make it.
I don't know. No, it's being on the cellular towers, you know, most of them have 700, 800, 900 in them. And,
yeah.
You know, they're a good size. Yeah. You know, bigger than most of the WISP antennas I see, even the 900 ones, because they're typically higher gain. Yet all the ones that Sprint's deployed recently can do 800, 1900, and 2500, all in the same enclosure for all three bands.
That's cool.
Hmm.
So I know, with enough money you can get it.
But, oh, for sure. Anything's possible if you pay enough. All right, man. It is the middle of the night, and I'm about to fall over.
Yeah.
Yes.
So let's see. What do you have coming up in the next week or so, Justin?
I got to go finish an air fiber installation. We installed some air fibers in southern Indiana, just didn't get them aligned. So I got to go back, and we basically ran out of time, and it was 100 degrees out and all that good stuff. So let's see, I got that coming up. Got to do that and more bridge to routed.
Sounds fun. But, I don't miss having to do those jobs.
I don't mind, because it's, you know, it's pretty cookie cutter at this point. You know, and that makes it good for the client, because, you know, the time's already been invested. So it's okay, let's customize it for you.
Very cool. All right, Mike, what do you got coming up in the next week?
Well, hopefully a lot more on that that antenna from ITE Elite, you know, get some more stuff nailed down with there. And I've got a couple new clients that I'm trying to bring online that one is I'm a tenant of theirs. They have a bunch of buildings, and I think they're finally coming around to doing things my way instead of what they wanted to do. And you know, so I have to scope out some line of sight for a few links there. And yeah, that's where I get my fiber feed currently, is out of there. And kind of changing some things out. Hopefully bringing on another $2,000 or $3,000 a month. That'd be nice.
Very nice.
Great. For doing whatever you do. Just get paid for it.
That's good, man. That's good. Let's see. What do I have going? I came up with kind of an idea. Since I'm doing this underfloor stuff, they have a big section of retractable seating. So I came up with kind of an interesting sort of mount for the radio, so that when they retract the seating, it doesn't crush it, stuff like that. We'll see.
Okay.
We'll see what happens with
that.
That'd
be a good thing.
And then probably just more of the school stuff. I think it's about to start getting really hot and heavy with those. I'm probably going to be, I don't know.
I guess you really think about it, the 1st of July, there's what, you know, a month and a half before school really starts.
Yeah. And so I think for the kind of the lower area in the arena, I figured out what I want to do with that, and I've done plenty of scans, so I think I got it pretty close to nailed down how I want everything. And it's relatively modular down there, so it's not so bad. But then I'm really going to start testing the upper stuff this week. Probably tomorrow I'll start testing kind of the middle section, and then the very highest. Those are going to be a pain in the butt, I think, just because you can't get to everything nearly as easily. But it'll come together.
Cool.
All right, man. Well, Mike, it's good having you, brother. I was expecting some more rhetoric. I think what we really need to do is get you and Tom on the same call. and just put the gloves on and ring the bell.
Yeah, well, Joel, just sit back and we'll have a little scorecard.
And just let it. Just,
that'd be interesting. Yeah.
Just let it go. And as always, Justin, man, it's always good talking to you, brother. It was good having Andrew on here earlier, even though he's gone.
Yep.
He was nice enough to sacrifice his lunch to talk to us. So this was a long one, man. This one's almost 2.5 hours. So we'll see if anybody actually makes it this far in the video. But to everybody out there, thanks. And keep the comments coming. Keep subscribing to our Facebook.
Give us ideas.
Subscribing to the RSS. And thanks.
Yeah,
cool.